Four's Company, Hour 2, here with you on a Saturday morning. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Connor New, and Jake Wallman, our producer, now behind the glass. So look, Titans minicamp, it's a big topic of conversation. Any football that we could talk here in town, we're always ecstatic to do. And I know that this week there's been a lot of animosity surrounding some players who have not been there, some players that have been there and have been either kind of, you know, hey, they've done well, they haven't done very well, you know, i.e. Will Levis, Jared, having fun with that conversation for
that
sure.
That was fun.
So I know that, you know, Newt, you had a great time with that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Filling in for Ian Safar the last little bit here. But look, we have got a lot to dive into with what minicamp has had to offer, because we get a limited amount of time to kind of talk about these things for sure on our Saturday show. But, you know, one thing I want to start off with, and it was a feel-good story and moment for this one player, and it was so good to hear from him about what his journey has been like up to this point. You know, I'm all about, you know, getting to know the players as people, because it makes a huge difference, right? And Caleb Farley has had a crazy career. Also, it goes back to college as well. He's not been, you know, under the cloud of a normal guy's career. He's been hindered by injuries, quite frankly, hampered by them. His father passes away in the house explosion. His mom passed away from cancer. And now he's here persevering, and he's had guys here with him the entire time. So I want to hear what you guys think about him sticking it out. But more importantly, he's had the support here from the Titans and his teammates. I think it's been a lovely story to hear him talk more about.
I'm telling you, God has truly came through and done the impossible. And really, I'm serious. So I have to proclaim that loud and clear, because it truly has been an impossible situation that I felt hopeless and helpless. And somehow I'm still standing here in cleats practicing. And I get to go home and watch some plays that I'm making and whatnot. So I'm extremely grateful, guys.
Your family situation too, I'm sure that's had that weigh heavily.
It's been some very dark times. Yeah, very dark times. And like the early statement about, you know, just wanting to get out there and get in pads and stuff, man, I would love to just go out there and just, you know, this is my year four, last year on my deal, you know, I'm ready to empty the tank and just deplete and just let it go, you know, be loose and aggressive.
Who has helped? You mentioned Chidobe. What has he done, and maybe others who have kind of helped you through all of this?
Well, I would say, like I said, the circumstance and the situation, it can have a mental pull on you in some ways where you try to act like something's not there, but it's there. But Chidobe has caught me, you know, mentally in some of those areas and absolutely not allowed me to stay there. And I think he needs to be, you know, acknowledged for that, because that's what a leader does. And it's great to see somebody older that he doesn't have to do anything for me, you know what I'm saying, to do stuff like that. I think it's awesome.
Well, that was Caleb Farley right there from Titans minicamp, sharing his thoughts on what he's kind of been going through, but more importantly, Chidobe has been kind of there for him during this time. So, like I had originally addressed, what do you guys make of what he's kind of been saying there?
I'm intrigued to see how, because he said, I want to empty the tank this year.
Yeah.
And he understands it's his last year of his deal. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same situation with Treylon Burks. Accept the role that you're going to be playing this year, if it's special teams or if it's somewhere in the secondary as like a third string, whatever it may be, accept that role and just build off of it.
Right.
And mentally, and what he said out there, out on the practice field, mm-hmm. mentally it sounds like that's what he's going to do.
Yeah, it is.
He's going to accept his role and go forward with mm-hmm. whatever. And, I mean, every player does that. But, like, you can kind of really feel it. You get a good emotional grasp mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah.
Jake, what do you think about it, man?
I mean, you guys know my thoughts on Caleb Farley.
Slot receiver.
My little rant on it. Yeah, slot receiver. I've got my Hokies polo on here. He is so talented. I mean, it's rare to find a player at his size and speed. And he really hasn't played a ton of cornerback or a ton of football, period, over the past 5 or 6 years. So I want people to treat him, Frazier, like you said, like Treylon Burks. Like, think that there is still something there and you hope it happens, but you're not counting on it. That's how I view Caleb Farley. But I feel like too many people are writing him off like he's Isaiah Wilson, and that he's already a bust. I think Caleb, he's got all the talent to do it. Let's just hope he stays healthy. And maybe he is just a special teamer, or maybe he does have to move to safety. But I think he can still be a positive force for this team.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Jake. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of role they end up putting him in. And please share your thoughts at 615-737-1025. We want to hear from you about what you may think Caleb Farley's impression has been so far from minicamp, but also what kind of impact will he have this fall with the two-tone blue over there at Nissan Stadium. So another player that I'm very interested in seeing what he becomes, guys, is J.C. Latham. And I know that his friend, Tavondre Sweat, has not been there right now as well. Now, Braden Narveson, small little tangent here I want to run through is, and I want to make a statement on Sweat as well, but one tangent I want to go on here. Braden Narveson was a kicker at Western Kentucky. He is with the Titans at this camp. He'll probably stick through training camp as well. Nick Folk is here. I don't think he's going to hang around and stay whatsoever. But Braden has posted a couple of photos with everybody hanging out, and I find it interesting that, yeah, Tavondre's healthy enough to, you know, go out with his buddies and healthy enough to, you know, do anything that they've possibly been able to do hanging out wise. And that's fine. Like, you can hang out with your buddies. But one thing that I find interesting is that he is out and about. So I'm not going to assume that he likes to self-indulge on being out and maybe not taking care of himself the way that he should possibly. I don't know that to be the case whatsoever. But the fact that he's not done any sort of practicing, it is concerning. However, on a different note, like I was getting to, J.C. Latham has been making quite the good impression with the media.
I love it. And I love his work ethic.
Yes, he's been really fun to hear from. So I'm very happy to hear what he's been having to say about persevering from the jump from college to the NFL. So here's what J.C. had to say about, you know, the tough transition for him so far here in Nashville.
What's been the toughest thing about this whole transition so far? What's been the most difficult part of this whole transition?
That's a good question. Probably kind of just like the speed and intensity of everything. You know, in the beginning of the year, I was in California playing Michigan, you know, and I'm so used to a college like schedule, especially at Alabama. A lot, it was kind of the gridiron of everything. So here, like they said, you know, guys don't want to. It's an investment, so you don't want to push guys through the ground and, you know, just get somebody hurt, but you also want to find that sweet spot for people to develop and but also stay healthy. So, you know, just trying to find that sweet spot as a professional now and not overloading myself, but also making sure that I'm staying on top of it and getting all the work in. That's probably been the toughest thing that I'm trying to still learn.
So there's an honest JC. You know, I love hearing that from him. He's given you the very thorough explanation for what things have been like for him since he's been in Nashville. So I want to hear what you guys have to say about what impression he's left on us speaking wise, but also what we've kind of seen in some videos as well over there from St. Thomas Sports Park.
The one thing that just sticks out to me, and I've seen it all over Twitter, is when it was last week or 2 weeks ago during OTAs, and he stayed after practice and was running sprints and working on, you know, Bertha and Olga. Like, he wants to get all that situated, and as he should. I mean, he's the first-round pick. There's high expectation for this guy. There is a lot of weight on his shoulders, and he plays it off well. Like, it's not bothering him, which, I mean, that's a true pro right there. I mean, he's learning, and he's learning quickly, and that's kind of what you need with a first-round pick, especially – hopefully your franchise guy at left tackle.
I hope so.
I mean, if that doesn't work out, then you're back to square one. Man. And maybe even worse than that. You might be at ground zero. But for J.C. Latham to kind of go out and, you know, answer that question, it shows his maturity level and how quickly it's kind of the process is going quickly, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
But as for Bill Callahan saying back during the draft, like, this was his kind of pick, it's starting to show.
And oh, yeah.
I'm glad that it's starting to show.
I read somewhere someone had posted something. They said that it was like 2 hours after practice, and JC is out there working on Bertha, and a storm is coming in. So they had to physically – his teammates had to physically go out there, grab him, and bring him in before the storm. And
he's a Bertha himself, so he was pulling him off the field or something.
He was still working, but I love that. I love that he feels the need that he's a rookie and he has something to prove. And granted, I mean, they drafted him at he's played right tackle in college and they're plugging him in at left tackle. But I love that he has this self thought, I guess, that people doubt him.
Yeah.
And I love that.
That go-get mentality. Where
go-getter mentality.
He doesn't have to be, I guess, somebody doesn't have to push him.
To coin a term that they use in the Alabama Crimson Tide program, he is letting naysayers know.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah. Link. There you go.
And it's he's lanking.
Yeah, exactly.
And it completely counters what we've seen from Tavondre Sweat on the opposite side of the ball, who's practiced, what, two practices?
I think once or twice.
Maybe just once.
Yeah, maybe once.
We talked about this yesterday on Stillman & Company. Tavondre is an injury risk.
Yeah.
He's always going to be an injury risk. Because these fat players, these big fat guys that come in and...
Husky.
Yeah. Husky.
Come on, man. Give him a little respect. A little husky.
Plus size. Anyways, those different bodied players.
The beefy boys.
The able-bodied guys.
The meat potatoes, we'll say.
Yeah, you got the meat potatoes.
They come in and they wreak havoc. They're always injury risks because their bodies are bigger. And take more time to heal. And that's one of Tavondre Sweat's biggest red flags is he's always hurt and doesn't have the drive to get better, it seems.
I mean, that's going to be interesting to keep an eye on for sure. And I think that at training camp, that's going to be a huge headline is can Tavondre handle things the way that a rookie ought to? Now, we know JC, without a question, is going to be out there putting in all the work that he possibly can. So I'm just interested to see how that shakes out for him, but also some of the other guys that are going to push him throughout this entire journey, because it's about the people that you're surrounded with.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that I kind of live by. It's who you're surrounded with, who makes you better. And so how is that going to work out in that locker room? You know, we've already heard those comments about how this coaching staff allows them to feel very open and honest with each other, where they can be, you know, outwardly spoken for themselves as well. So I find that interesting for sure. So we're going to go into this fall at training camp knowing in September what things will be like for them.
Let me just say this before I toss it to Jake really quick.
Yeah.
When Taylor Lewan was drafted to the Titans and was the left tackle for this franchise, he immediately made his imprint as a true leader of a team. Personally to me, I see qualities of that with J.C. Latham.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. If you're a first-round draft pick, you need to show it immediately.
Yeah.
And it's June.
It's
early June.
Yeah. It's June. It's talking season. That's what everybody talks about. I get it. But it is June. You're a first-round draft pick. You're putting in the work. People say work in silence. That's like the new trend. I want to see a leader. Show me a leader out there.
I think he is doing that to a certain extent. I really do. Jake, do you have any thoughts on this before we transition over to some Vols baseball?
Yeah, I think I mentioned it on a show a few weeks ago, but I would like to trademark the anti-Isaiah Wilson for J.C. Latham. Because J.C. is out there showing that he wants to get better and he wants to help this team. While I think at this point, 4 years ago, Isaiah Wilson was jumping off third floor balconies and doing donuts in intersections. So I think J.C. Latham has done everything right so far. We'll see what it looks like when the bullets actually start flying and he's out there playing left tackle in Chicago. But so far, you can't really point to anything negative with J.C. Latham since the commissioner read his name.
No, exactly. So we're looking forward to seeing how some of these rookies do out there at the Titans facility, whether it's minicamp or, hey, training camp is coming up sooner rather than later. We have a full summer ahead of us, but looking forward to seeing what we got there. So, hey, just to let you guys know out there listening, come play golf with us, 102.5 The Game, and do some good at the same time. You're invited to the 615 Open on June 20th at the Hermitage Golf Course. Come golf with celebrities on a beautiful course with all the proceeds going to Souls for Souls, who helps local kids in need. And this is going to be so much fun, guys. I'm looking forward to this tournament as well. Golf is one of my favorite things to do, so I can't wait to see you guys out there. Get some more info now at 615open.com. Coming up next year on Four's Company, we're going to dive into the Vols baseball team. They had a huge win last night. They currently just blasted a home run to take a 1-0 lead to kick things off up there in Knoxville. So we'll talk about the latest on them here on Four's Company on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Four's Company right here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Nick Kieser, Nick Frazier, Connor New, Jake Wallman behind the glass here this morning, and Jake Lyman live from Virginia Remote catching up on the Tennessee Volunteers baseball program this morning. They took a 1-0 lead early on by Blake Burke. He blasted a home run to center field. So the Vols had a huge win yesterday, and do we really trust this team to make it all the way to Omaha and win this thing? That's the question that we're going to ask ourselves here in this segment. Please feel free to share your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Fellas, do you trust this team? Let's just start there. Do you really trust this team to make it to Omaha and win outright? Is there a possibility they hit some rocks in the road along this way?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Newt. I'm sorry.
Yes, there's a possibility they hit rocks. No, I do not trust them. And I'll give you the simple answer. You know, I'm looking at the scoreboard right now. You know what's right next to their name? A number one. That number one seed is cursed.
It's been 25 years. The last team as a number one that won was Miami. So it's been 25 years, Newt. I mean, you were just an afterthought at that point long time ago.
I wasn't here yet, but
yeah. I mean, we were all youngins too, so it really doesn't matter.
But hey, listen, I mean, I don't think they have the pitching staff to go that deep. I really question the pitching. The offense is there, but the pitching is what's going to win you in Omaha. We've seen it. You know, last year it was Paul Skeens. Granted, that LSU team had dynamic hitting and they had. You know, what's the one guy that's on the team now?
Tommy Tanks
always bombs away. But I just haven't seen the pitching staff from Tennessee. Like, I mean, granted, Evansville is a great hitting team. They're what'd you say yesterday, Frazier? They're batting 300.
Yeah, their team as a whole averages 301 batting average.
They gave up what, 6 runs to Evansville yesterday?
Yeah, but you also got to remember, like, in a super regional. Yeah, it's Evansville, but my thing for Tennessee is that I agree to the point where the pitching's good. It's good. It's going to get them to Omaha, obviously. But also, it's the point where they're in a pressured situation. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. I think Tennessee folds under pressure, and that's just me.
No, I agree with you.
Pressure makes diamonds, and I don't think this team is a true diamond team.
Sure.
That's just me.
I mean, that's a positive outlook on one part for them. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is that I think their offense has been dictating the pace enough. And by the way, they're in the middle of the first. Tennessee's leading 3-0 now. 3 homers in the first inning. So we'll see what they continue to do. So keep it locked here on 102.5 The Game. We'll give you those updates. But Jake, what do you think as well? I mean, I'm curious to see. We talked to Aria earlier about how much Vanderbilt has to keep up. But how do you feel about the Vols?
I mean, they can do it, certainly. I mean, it looks like, based on the early returns, that they're going to sweep Evansville and move on to Omaha today. You just look through the teams remaining, and there's nobody who really scares you. Like, I'm looking up and down right now. Like, North Carolina's played well, but do I trust them to – like, would I pick Tennessee right now? Probably, based on the teams left. I know Texas A&M's good, Kentucky – man, we could have a lot of SEC schools in Omaha.
SEC is a different beast in baseball, man.
I mean, there's a chance there could be 5 of the 8 could be SEC schools.
That's could wild. Be.
It would need Florida to upset Clemson. But, yeah, I don't see anybody that I would pick Tennessee over. But it is tough. Once you get to Omaha, you got to have a lot of pitching, like you guys were saying. And does Tennessee have that much depth to get them through 5, 6, 7 games in Omaha? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, it does. And Drew Beam just took the mound as well. And you know, I think there are a few guys that can lead them to success. But, you know, it is a very fair question. Can the pitching be something that we're aware of and go, wow, we're impressed? As they go into Omaha, you know, are we going to continue to feel as if it's just enough to get them to a national championship? And so I've been impressed with them so far in the tournament. They've had this swagger to them. They've been able to just take force and use their talent and work hard at it. And it's been fun to watch them play for sure. So are they going to be able to answer that question of can they get past, you know, the Super Regional in a great way as they get the first out of the bottom of the first here? Tennessee's up 3-0 again.
Let me just say this about Omaha. It is not a hitter's ballpark, okay?
No, it's
And looking
not.
At Knoxville, this is a hitter's ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
The wind blows the correct way, that ball is gone about 30, 40 feet past the warning track. Now, with Omaha, Tennessee, I call this a warning track power team. A lot of balls are going to just drop right in front of the wall, and that's unfortunate for them, but that's what's going to happen. And that's just the way I perceive things. That's the way a lot of teams that are in college, that's the way it's going to happen. If the wind blows the right way in Omaha, sure, you'll see a lot more home runs.
Sure.
But those fences are deep. They are deep. It's treated like a true major league ballpark. These kids got to learn, and if they don't got the power, so be it.
Right.
Then that's when you got teams that can hit RBIs in the gaps. That's why in college baseball – As a spectator, I love seeing guys in the batting lineup that can hit him in the gaps, especially just perfect. Get him past the second level of the infield, go into the gaps. I mean, that's perfect. And you got speedy base runners. I mean, sure, I'm just kind of talking out of my head here, but at the same time, that's kind of what you want when you get to the final stages.
Yeah.
You want to have that versatility in your lineup. You just don't want a bunch of heavy hitters that you're just swinging for the fences. I mean, that's kind of what everything's turned into in baseball is the exit velo, the launch angles, all that stuff. Like, come on, let's get back to fundamental baseball, hit in the gaps, score some runs.
Right.
But that's kind of what I'm a little worried about with Tennessee is that they got a lot of heavy hitters.
Yeah, they do. And I'm interested to see how they kind of, you know, are able to handle Evansville because their backs are against the wall this afternoon. You know, even though they're already down 3-0, you know, can that be something that Tennessee looks at and goes, let's put them away and let's do it, you know, in a dominant fashion. So that's going to be something that we keep tabs on for sure. You know, I mean, Frazier, you wanted Evansville to get past this round.
I did. I like them as a ball team, man. They're really good. I just really good's a little bit of overstatement there, but like, yeah, pitching's not there, but their batting lineup it's solid.
Yeah.
Like I watched them go up against a few other teams before the Super Regional. They were just, I wouldn't say taking other teams to cleaners, but they were playing solid baseball.
Dr. Crin, we have a person on Twitter that agrees with you. His name is Mason Rochelle. He says, the Vols play in a shoebox. 70% of their home runs in Knoxville are loud outs in Omaha.
There you go. He's right. I believe that firmly. I mean, Jake, do you think that's a fair assessment? Is Knoxville just a hitter's ballpark, and once they get to Omaha, it's a different game?
Yeah, Knoxville, they play in a Cracker Jack box over there. Georgia too, that a lot of SEC ballparks play like that. Hawkins Field doesn't, which is why I think Bandy's power numbers aren't quite as good as everybody else's. But yeah, Tennessee, they've got great players, but the field they play in certainly plays a factor in all those home runs that Christian Moore hits at Blake Burke and all those guys. So we'll see when they get to Omaha. I mean, we saw last year, Florida and LSU both were power hitting teams and they did fine in Omaha. So, well, it all depends on, you know, if you can hit a little bit further in Omaha. Because Lindsey Nelson plays much, much more of a hitter's ballpark.
Yeah, it definitely does. And Patrick on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, real quick says, the Vols have one of the deepest pitching staffs in college baseball. Their offense is next level. The Evansville coach said it's the best baseball team he has seen in 16 years as a head coach.
Well, yeah, they're playing in a small conference. Come on, man.
I don't agree with that.
Give me a better comment.
Deep pitching staff comment either. They don't have the deepest pitching staff in all of college baseball.
It rubs me the wrong way when I hear they have the next level hitting.
Hey, man. That's what Patrick thinks.
Patrick, you're probably a nice guy, man, but I got to disagree.
You are entitled to your opinion.
You're right. You're right.
And we love you, and we thank you for listening to the show.
It's giving me heartburn to think about
it. As I say this, I feel just like Jared Stillman. But I disagree with your point. I do not believe that they have the deepest Who there? I could name five other teams that have a deeper pitching staff than Tennessee right
Go
now.
Go for it. Name five.
Arkansas. Granted, they're out.
Okay.
LSU, I feel like, has a deeper pitching staff.
And they are.
Out.
Yep. Keep going.
Oh.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I still don't. I don't see it.
It's all right.
A&M's a front runner for me.
A&M for sure. A&M,
yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
I would not put Kentucky up there. Kentucky doesn't.
Wow, really? The homer right here. No?
Homer? No, I'm countering against my team.
Okay.
Jake, any other pitching staffs in the nation that stick out to you?
Trying to think. I mean,
Clemson, maybe?
I'm not. I don't know enough about all pitching staffs that are still playing to make a determination of who has the deepest one. But, I mean, from what I've seen from Tennessee, they love to get into a shootout with you. Like, they want to win games 13-9 or something like that. So I think that's probably false to say that they have the deepest pitching staff in the country. But is it good enough with the offense that they have? I think probably. I think they're going to have a good shot to go all the way in Omaha. But, you know, they haven't been able to get it done there in the past. Mm. You wonder if maybe that monkey on their back is going to play a factor as well.
I don't know. But, hey, every time that you get a fresh batch of guys, and, hey, Vitello's a great coach. I mean, they've got a relatively clean slate here to get there. So we'll see what the Vols do. We'll keep you updated later on here on Four's Company. It's currently 3-0 in the top of the second right now. Tennessee playing with no outs. So we'll see how the Vols kind of fare. Are they going to get the Omaha with a clean sweep? We'll stay tuned for that. But, hey, be sure to tune in to 102.5 The Game tonight as the Nashville Cats take on the Billings Outlaws pregame at 6:30 with kickoff at 7. Coverage also will be available on the 102.5 The Game app at thegamenashville.com as well. Cats football coverage is presented by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Up next, we're going to dive back into some hockey, an important team that most people ask me about. The Milwaukee Admirals are playing in Game 5 this evening, hoping to stave off further elimination opportunity against Coachella Valley. Can they do it once more? And also, what are the Predators going to be up to this offseason? And has anyone in Milwaukee made an early impression to possibly make the team next season? Stay tuned for that. You're listening to Four's Company on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Welcome back to Four's Company here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Nick Kieser, Nick Frazier, Connor New, Jake Wallman, and Jake Lyman is up in Virginia, remote, talking to us this weekend. So we've got a lot to dive into here, talking about the Milwaukee Admirals and the Nashville Predators as well. So Game 5 is tonight for the boys up there in Milwaukee, and it's a big testament to them sticking it out and winning Game 4. At home, they could have possibly been swept by the Coachella Valley Firebirds, but they were able to hang in. They won 7-2, which was crazy to see. Lots of two-goal games from a couple of guys. I know that Fedor Svechkov has been playing really well. So has Zach LaRue as well. That's who I want to talk more about here in just a second. So, fellas, with the Predators offseason, there are obviously a lot of questions surrounding on who they could possibly bring back. They've got a couple of UFAs in mind that I want to hit on. You've got Jason Zucker. Anthony Beauvillier could also be a guy that comes back. Kiefer Sherwood. Obviously, Tyson Barrie is out the door. You got Alex Carrier and Kevin Lankinen as well. But let's hit on those forwards, because I really have thought to myself lately, Zach LaRue is going to be a guy that makes this team next year. And I think he's making his case for it right now.
He's
absolutely
a Bruno guy.
Oh,
for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
He plays that Bruno style. He's to me, he's similar to a Luke Evangelista.
Mm-hmm.
In
some ways, I think, yes.
In a goal-scoring aspect, I think they're kind of the same.
Yeah.
But he's a Bruno system guy for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see him elevated. I'd love to see – I know he had kind of a down year this year, but I'd love to see Joakim Kimmel get his reps.
Well, I think – for a guy like Kimmel, we know he's got the shot. We know on the power play he's a weapon, and I don't want to say he's overused in that sense, but when a guy is in the same spot for the majority of the season, teams pick up on that, and if he is still consistent with, you know, all of those looks and he's still hitting those shots and he scores, teams have to still find ways to stop him. And I think he's done very well at being that consistent forward for them there. But also, we already know that Spencer Stastny is going to be a lockup here next year. That's pretty safe to say, I would say. One thing that I find really intriguing is, who are they going to start in goal? You know, I mean, the conversation has been Troy Grosnick has been starting well when they put him in, and Yaroslav Askarov, you know, he's been inconsistent once again this postseason. You know, I think at times he's had flashes of greatness like he should be showing. But quite frankly, at the same time, you have to ask yourself, has he shown enough to really be a guy that can back up UC Saros or end up starting a little bit more often next season? I don't think he's personally ready to make the jump completely. I think he still needs some time. You know, Pecorine, you know, he didn't come out and straight out say it, but I think that same day that he got honored being put in the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, he made it evident that spending more time down there is greater for everybody's sake. So, I mean, what do you guys think about that? Are there some guys that need to spend more time down there? Is Yaroslav Askarov due to spend some more time there? Do you think he's ready to make the jump?
Personally, I don't think Askarov is ready.
Okay.
I think he lacks in maturity a little bit. Granted, he is a fun player and he does some fun stuff, like bench pressing the goal and all that. But I think this playoffs for the Milwaukee Admirals has been kind of a testament to how they feel about Yaroslav Askarov. I mean, he hasn't started in some pivotal games. They've been starting Troy Goat.
Troy Grosnick. Yeah, you're good.
Troy Grosnick.
They're tongue twisters, buddy.
Yeah, they can be. Yeah. But look, they went to Troy in that first round when they were down against Texas. And so Troy was that reliable veteran. So I'm curious to see what Nick and Jake would think in terms of some of these prospects as well.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that kind of sticks out to me that's in Milwaukee right now is Spencer Stastny.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one I think is a definitive factor that come up to Nashville next year, just because of the departure of McDonough and, you know, just to fill some holes. But as for maybe some forwards, nothing really sticks out to me that much. I mean, you could say Zach LaRue or Yusso Parsonen maybe. I think Parsonen needs a little more time in Milwaukee.
Probably.
I mean, I've said it on the show multiple times already. You have a solid core guys. Just kind of keep developing them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't press the youth movement too much going into next season. Just get one or two guys that you know that will help you out consistently. And just the rest of them, just help them develop. And if, you know, an injury happens along the way, bring them up and then go from there and put them back down. But that's kind of my stance on things. Jake?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think a lot of those guys probably do need a little bit more time to marinate down there. But this has got to be great experience for them, getting to play this late into the postseason. You get to play in a full 7-game series. And I'm glad that they didn't get swept the other night, because – every game for them is valuable reps for a lot of these young guys, especially Askarov and LaRue and Igor Afanasyev. Like, you've got all these young guys down there that getting playoff clutch reps in these big time situations, it can only help them when they come up to the big team and play for the Preds. And hey, if they have to go play in a playoff game, they've done it before. They did it last year too, making it to the Western Conference Finals. So excited to see all these guys continuing to get reps in some pretty big time situations.
Yeah, I mean, look, and really quickly too, the reason I bring up Askarov, he's 2-3 this postseason. He's averaging 3.25 goals against average, and he's a sub 900 for save percentage as well. Look, I think in some games he has looked like the guy that we all know, but you know, he played those first two games in Texas. Didn't look like himself. You start off there. They play Grand Rapids in the next round, and he comes in and he gets two wins in a row. Things look a little bit better for him. They were grim at first, but then he loses that other third game against Grand Rapids where they can't close things out. So to me, it's not about the clutch ability. I think it's just about, you know, is he feeling a lot of pressure? How is he handling, you know, that, hey, I'm the guy here. I know I can do this. And so we know the confidence is there, the charisma, the attitude. He's going to present that swagger. But when he's faced with guys that are arguably some of them are ready to make that jump. You know, Grand Rapids has great prospects. They had a great challenge against them. They're now facing Coachella Valley, Seattle's affiliate, who has plenty of talented guys that are rising. So it tells me that perhaps they're taking more time with him to observe and, you know, take in good practice and learning from these guys as well.
How much time is too much time?
Too much. That is a good question. I would say if they end up getting him to a new contract and it's about a 2 or 3 year deal, let's just say that's a good sweet spot. You want, I would say, for his next deal. Now, it'd be really concerning if they give him a 1 year deal. But look, we're far off from really being too concerned about his contract status for sure, because he's an unproven commodity, but he's a high level prospect. I think too much time there would be 4 to 5 years for sure. I mean, if he's there past another two seasons, that is cause for major concern. And especially if he plays at the same rate that he's at now. That's what I would be really curious about. And also, too, I really like hearing this as well. Alex Doherty's up there right now talking about, you know, some things with Carl Taylor. And Carl Taylor is really high on LaRue. And I want to read this quote for you guys, and we could hit on Zach LaRue for just a second here, because I think he's a guy that will be able to make the jump. And talking to him in my conversations with him some this season and getting to sit down with him, whether it was up there or it's been on the phone, it's been great to hear. He has that player charisma as well. I think he could definitely make the jump. I'm not 100% positive. We'll see what he looks like at training camp. But here's what Carl Taylor said via quote from Alex Doherty on Twitter. He says, just everyone calm down a little bit. He's a first-year player. It takes some time. He's having a great playoff. He's very competitive. The moment gets big, he responds. But just remember, he's young. So there's that quote from Carl Taylor. What do you guys take away from a coach that has seen him become pro, that has been kind of ebb and flow with his words on him, but he definitely does not mince words about how high Nashville thinks of him?
Yeah, I agree with Carl Taylor. To an extent, like I said earlier, it's still, I think this playoffs has been a testament to how they feel about him going up and his maturity level, and I think it factors into bigger things up in Nashville. What are we going to do goaltending wise there? And I think we all know what the answer is going to be. It's just a matter of how much they're willing to spend and how respondent your current goaltender is to negotiating.
Right.
I feel like Jared said one thing a while ago that has kind of stuck with me, and it's you don't draft a player in 2020 to play in 2028. So obviously.
Right.
So I feel if I am the Milwaukee Admirals, I feel you keep Askarov next season down there. Then you see how he does. If he improves, I think you elevate him, and I think you don't start him. You give him the backup role behind Saros, similar to what the Predators did with Pecorino.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Same thing. I think you let him marinate as the backup for, you know, 1 to 3 years, and then if he does well, you hand him the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah,
he's your goalie.
Exactly. So we'll see what that ends up looking like. Can they win game 5 tonight against Coachella Valley? All the Preds fans out there, clamor for more conversation on that. We've got you covered right here on Forest Company. Every weekend, we analyze what is going on with the Nashville Predators organization. I'll keep you updated as well with a couple of things I either hear or get to learn more about. So what could contracts look like? May have more on that in the coming weeks as well. So we'll see what that ends up looking like. But hey, coming up next, we're going to make our weekend picks here on Forest Company. We love making our weekend picks. We'll end up talking a little bit about the NBA Finals, the NHL postseason as well. And our own pick, which I know rugby may be thrown in there by somebody.
Love that rugby, baby. So let's go.
What if I take rugby from you today?
That's fine. Do it. I have another pick. I'm ready.
So we'll address our weekend picks coming up next here on Forest Company on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. I don't Tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats here at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. As I flub the Nashville Sounds
sponsor. No one can
sponsor.
Talk today.
It's okay. But look, it's time for our weekend picks here on Four's Company here on 102.5 The Game. So I want to start things off by talking about the NBA Finals. All right, fellas.
Can I take my victory lap, please, about our picks?
Well, oh, I didn't hear your pick.
Thank you. I picked Real Madrid to win the Champions League final.
You and David James, right?
Yeah, that was my pick for David, but you know, neither here nor there. I also picked Tony Cruz to have an assist and Vinny Jr. to get a goal. All that happened.
Ding, ding, ding.
Man. So I was getting big praise about that on Twitter for people
Heck
that listen.
Yeah.
So there you go. Listen
Love
for more
it.
Good picks, I guess.
Okay.
But did that, and NRL pick actually hit too, I think. So,
okay. Have we all? All four of us, have we all had a perfect week? I have.
I didn't
you
pick
have.
Last
I
week, have. Obviously.
You haven't. Jake, yeah. Have you?
I had the one with the Kentucky Derby where I picked Mystic Dance.
He did.
Mystic Dance. I love Man. That. That was great.
Yeah.
Such
that
a
was
memorable
fun.
Moment.
It was. On our program, especially hitting on a horse race that happens once a year, that was awesome.
You know what that means, Nick? That means you're due.
I am due. I hope so. Yeah, I really hope.
This is your week.
It is
your week.
So. We'll see. But let's kick things off with the Boston Celtics taking on the Dallas Mavericks in game two of the NBA Finals. Look, I was very shocked that it was kind of a blowout in the first game. Most fans are probably like, yeah, well, the Celtics, you know, they're so much better offensively than Dallas. Look, I think Dallas – Luka Doncic had 30 points in game one and they still lost. If the rest of the bench steps up, it's a more competitive game. I'm going to go Dallas in game two. I think they steal a game in Boston. And quite frankly, this one might go seven. I could see it going seven. We'll be talking about this next week as well. But give me the Dallas Mavericks in game two. Connor, who do you got?
I agree with you. I like Dallas to steal one in Boston. Right. I like Luka and Kyrie, I love that duo. I listen to D-Mace talk about him all the time.
I know. He loves his NBA.
He loves him. What did he say yesterday? 55-plus combined? Yeah.
He had Kyrie and Luka both to have 50-plus combined
God
points.
Sleep.
I love that.
And it's possible.
I love that, yeah.
In game, six is what it was against the Timberwolves? They had 36 apiece. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So.
And this is where my homer comes out, because the Mavericks do have a Wildcat on their team.
Oh, boy.
P.J. Washington.
Yep.
And I love P.J. Washington. So I'll take the Mavericks tonight to steal one. And, yeah, I agree. I think this could go six or seven.
I think so, yeah. Frazier, who do you got tonight?
It's going to be kind of an uncommon pick. I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm taking Boston to win. And then Dallas is going to win the next two. So I think it's 2-2.
Only home games, huh?
Yeah. I just have a weird feeling. It kind of was like the I think it was the Rangers and Panthers series, where every team, when they played at home, they won their home game.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what I feel here for this. I do think Kyrie does have to step it up. Did not have a great game in game one. Didn't really contribute that much. I think if he has at least 25 points, it puts them in the conversation of not getting blown out by 25 or whatever that was.
I think
was.
The same.
But that's kind of where I'm leaning. I'm leaning towards Boston to win. And Al Horford, for some reason, either Al Horford or just an uncommon player is going to just drop a lot of points.
Hey, he's a good stretch four.
Yeah.
I love it.
I'd say Al Horford scores 15 points.
They'll bring him off the bench tonight, I
15
assume,
points cause... and 3 3-pointers. Al Horford. There you go.
There you go.
Put it in there.
All right, Lyman, what do you got?
This is a tough one, because I think the Celtics do have the best team by far. I mean, they're loaded all 1 through 5. They got Kristaps coming off the bench now. But I think the best player in a series is going to steal a couple, and Luka's the best player. So I will go with you, Keezer and Connor. I'm going to take Dallas in game two.
Okay, I love it. So we'll see how that all shakes out going into next week, who will have – the so-called victory lap. So we'll see what that ends up looking like. But NHL Finals, fellas, it's here. I'm so excited to see what this turns into. I, on a brief note, was when I was flying home, I was in Victoria, British Columbia. I have never seen an entire country, needless to say, but this entire airport was like jerseys decked out, T-shirts decked out. chanting the Oilers, go Oilers, and the restaurant actually had to make them stop because they had to address orders.
Holy cow.
Hey, you ordered this, you ordered that, and they had to be like, you can't do that. So, look.
I love that.
Yeah, it was at the airport. They were going nuts up there in British Columbia. I think that's how all of Canada is looking right now. So, if a Canadian team makes it, they're all cheering for them. So, but game one tonight, it's down there in Florida. Paul Maurice and Chris Knobloch have the biggest disparity in coaching experience in NHL history in the finals. I think Knobloch has 69 regular season games coached, and then you've got Paul Maurice with 1,800 games under his belt. So, look, in game one, I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers. Ooh. I think it's going to be a close game tonight. I really do. They're at home. The Rats will be flying at the end of this one. So, Connor, who do you got?
I'll counter that. I'll go Oil.
Ooh,
I like the Oil to steal one in Florida. The Rats will be flying, but who does the Oil have? Connor freaking McDavid.
They do, yeah.
As Max Herz so lovingly calls me, the Conheads.
Yeah.
He is a fellow Conhead.
Yeah, he
and
is.
And I have to support my fellow Conheads. But, I feel like this is going to be a high-scoring one. I really do. I think this is going to be like a 5-4 kind of game.
I don't know. The defense is good on both teams. Frazier, who do you got in this one?
I'm taking the Oilers in six. I think the Oilers win game one.
Yep.
And McDavid scores two tonight.
Oh, okay.
If not, he gets a goal and two assists.
Wow, okay. Lyman, what you got?
Get me McJesus. I got the Oilers.
Jesus.
McDouble.
I like it. Oh, no. McDouble. Let's not jump ahead with the
Connor McDavid McDonald's. McDouble, baby. Love
McDouble.
It.
McDouble, yeah. Man. That's a good McLovin. NIL deal for him.
McLovin. It is, isn't it, Jake? That's what I was thinking.
Golly, McLovin. All right, well, we've got our NHL picks in the bag, so we'll see how that does later this evening down there in Florida. By the way, DJ Khaled is going to be performing down in Florida before the game.
Quotes, performing is,
well,
a stretch.
Yeah.
He's going to play the song, and he's going to go, yeah, yeah, and just add ad-libs.
Another one. Another
we the best music.
Yeah, exactly. Go. And then Kid Leroy's down there, too. They got a quite good line. They have quite the good lineup down there in Florida. So we'll see how everything does down there this evening. And now our own picks to wrap things up with our weekend picks. I'm going to stick in college baseball. And I'm going to pick Georgia over the North Carolina State Wolfpack in game one. And it, you know what? Not just game one. I'll take them in the series as well.
Okay.
I really like how Georgia was playing toward the end of the season. They've looked really well, so I'm going to go with them Bulldogs. Connor, what do you got for us?
I'll go Homer. I'll stick in college baseball. In the Lexington Super Regional, I'll take the Cats over Oregon State. Both teams swept their way through the regionals. Obviously, the Beavers swept through the Corvallis region. But the Cats play significantly better in Kentucky Proud Park in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Cats to win today. I feel like this might be a high-scoring affair, we shall say. But I like Ryan Waldschmidt to get the home run, and I like the Cats to move within one of going to Omaha for the first time in program history.
Yeah, I like the sound of that. That sounds like a fun pick. Okay. Frazier, what do you got for us? Is it rugby? Is it soccer?
This
what do you
is
got?
Baseball, actually. I'm going to the Diamond. Not college baseball. I do have a rugby pick. I will put that out there. No, I'm going to go to the Diamond in MLB. And I'm taking the Baltimore Orioles to win today.
Oh.
And so on Caroline William Demons to do Take It to the Bank, I always do like a home run pick.
Uh-huh.
So I had Bryson Stott to get a home run in the series for their London series. Today, just only today, I think Ryan Mountcastle gets himself a homer.
I love that.
The reason why is because I have him on one of my fantasy baseball teams, and I'm kind of down right now.
He's a silent hitter.
So I think – and he got a home run last night. Yeah. And he does really good against, you know, this pitcher he's going up against. So I'm taking Mountcastle to get –
Is he a lefty?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
No, switch maybe. Righty, I think, one of the two.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the two. He's on one side of the plate.
He does one of three things.
As for my rugby pick, NRL, for people that don't know what NRL is, it's National Rugby League. I am going to be taking, and just stick with me here, I'm taking the Melbourne Storm, and let's see who else. And I'm taking Melbourne Storm to beat the Newcastle Knights, and Mike Acevo to get a try. And that's in a different game. That's with the Parramatta Eels.
Okay.
I just love the name Parramatta, the Eels. Parramatta. And Mike Acevo is an absolute unit. He's
sounds like a real estate agent.
He's the Derrick Henry of NRL.
So. I had a lot of Aussies when I was on my trip, too, up there in British Columbia. Yeah. So I didn't – there was a lot of surfing on the TVs up there, which was fun. So, yeah. But anyway, so I had that little small observation.
Where can we watch NRL?
You can watch it on Fox Sports.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's on national
really early in the morning, apparently.
At midnight. Yes.
Oh, my god.
Midnight
gosh.
Up into the early mornings of 5 a.m.
Does it bleed directly into, like, paid programming?
Yeah, it does.
It's just like an infomercial?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I was working overnight, that's kind of a watch here. But, Jake, please get to your picks. I'm sorry. I'm taking up too much time.
I will go back to college baseball, and I'm going to go big here. I think we get an all ACC SEC College World Series.
Mm.
That's my pick. So that means Florida State beats UConn, Tennessee beats Evansville, A&M beats Oregon, Virginia beats Kansas State, Kentucky beats Oregon State, North Carolina beats West Virginia. And then we have two ACC SEC Supers, so one of those teams is going to win. Wow. So I think, all ACC, all SEC in Omaha.
Dang. Power two. That's a huge called shot, Jake. Yeah. Well, we'll see if any of that works out for you. But, man, it's a pretty busy weekend. Obviously, here in Nashville, we're not used to not having as much to speak on for live sports. But there's quite a bit going on. We have NASCAR coming up here on the station this weekend. Obviously, Tennessee is up currently 4-0 on Evansville. They're in the bottom of the third currently. So how do they look going into Omaha? Looks like they could come out of this one. I don't know with a shutout. It's too early to tell, but they are up 4-0, so stay tuned for that one. But, fellas, it feels good to be back. I'm so happy that my trip came back without a hitch, travel-wise as well. I know that
– You did get hitched, though. There you go.
Well, I got hitched. Yes. There you go. And I heard a great review about the wedding, Frazier. So
you're welcome.
Would you use Yelp?
No, on the
show.
No. You listen back to it.
Golly, you lived this review with
By the
him.
Way, it reminds me, I got to take the trailer hitch off my car when I get home.
Man,
so.
Man. It's been a long week for me. Yeah. I've been dealing with
you've had Jared.
Someone. Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's been fun. One. We've got a lot to talk down when we come back next weekend. Jake will be here with us, so glad to
hopefully.
Have you back. Yeah,
hopefully
we
car.
Got the car. Yeah.
I kind of have to be back there. We'll figure it out. I will be in studio next Saturday.
Yes. Yes.
He's got to walk back.
All right,
I might
Jake.
Have to.
All right. Well, Jake, thank you so much for hopping on with us here while you're up there. Glad to hear from you. But, fellas, man, I'm glad that we're all back and talking this summer. So without any further ado, we've got a busy summer. Lots of things to break down next week. Stay tuned for all the coverage this week on 102.5 The Game. But this has been Four's Company this week. So stay tuned with us on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
See ya.